This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November 1994 examination. In English as a second language. Paper 4. Listening comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, candidate number, and center number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you're doing the test. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you're all ready, here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. You will hear each question twice. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each question twice. Question 1. You have arrived for a job interview with a local company. Who is going to interview you?
Good morning. Thank you for coming. Miss Davis has been unavoidably detained, I'm afraid. However, the interviews will go ahead as planned. But with our deputy manager, Mr. Bell. Good morning. Thank you for coming. Miss Davis has been unavoidably detained, I'm afraid. However, the interviews will go ahead as planned. But with our deputy manager, Mr. Bell.
Question 2. You hear a passenger asking about train fares. Where does he want to go?
How much is a cheap day return to London, leaving Cambridge on Friday after 10 a.m, and including travel on the Underground? How much is a cheap day return to London, leaving Cambridge on Friday after 10 a.m, and including travel on the Underground?
Question 3. George is going to get tickets for the cinema. What is the date and time of the performance he wants to go to?
I'll get the tickets. I'll be in town tomorrow, and I can pick them up at the box office. I'll try for the 4:15 show this Sunday, the 27th. But if that's full, we could go for the Saturday evening show at 8 o'clock. I'll get the tickets. I'll be in town tomorrow, and I can pick them up at the box office. I'll try for the 4:15 show this Sunday, the 27th. But if that's full, we could go for the Saturday evening show at 8 o'clock.
Question 4. You're in a large department store when you hear an announcement. What is going to happen?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will be testing the fire alarm system in 5 minutes' time. The alarm will sound for only a few seconds. Please just continue as normal. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be testing the fire alarm system in 5 minutes' time. The alarm will sound for only a few seconds. Please just continue as normal. Thank you.
Question 5. Your friend Anne is complaining about her brother. Why is he unhappy?
He's really getting on my nerves. He never goes out. He just sits up there brooding in his room looking miserable and playing that silly song over and over again. The sooner he forgets her and gets a new girlfriend, the better. He's really getting on my nerves. He never goes out. He just sits up there brooding in his room looking miserable and playing that silly song over and over again. The sooner he forgets her and gets a new girlfriend, the better.
Question 6. You're at home waiting for Georgia when the telephone rings. Where has she gone? Why has she gone there?
Sorry, Georgia can't make it today. She's had to rush off to pick up her son from school. He had a bad fall in the playground, and the school phoned her and asked her to come and take him home.
That is the last question in part one. In a moment, you will hear part two. Now look at part two, exercise one. Part 2. Exercise 1. Question 7. You are spending 6 months in Cambridge and have gone to an international dance evening. Before the dancing starts, the social events organizer tells everyone about the other activities which are planned. You decide to take some notes so that you can pass on the information to your friends. Listen to what the organizer says and complete the notes below. You will hear what the organizer says twice.
First of all, I'd like to say a big welcome to all our new members. We are delighted to see you here tonight at our international dance evening. Before we start the dancing, I'd like to give you details of our social program for the next few weeks. On Saturday the 5th, why not join Dave for lunch at 12:30 at Tatty's in Regent Street? Tatties do wonderful baked potato snacks, and it's a great place to meet for a chat. And here's something for musicians and music lovers. Wednesday the 9th is our music evening with Mike and his friends. Bring your own instrument, if you've got one, and join in, or just sit back and listen. That's at the club room here at 8 p.m. And for those of you who are thinking of visiting Scotland, a chance to see Pat's pictures of Scotland and hear something of the history of the country. This talk with slides will be on Friday the 18th at Pat's house, 19 King Street, at 7:30 p.m. And for those who are feeling energetic on Saturday the 26th, John is leading a walk around the very pretty town of Saffron Walden. If you'd like to join him, meet at the bus station at 11 a.m. Remember to wear suitable footwear and bring a coat or umbrella in case it rains. On the following Saturday, that's Saturday the 5th of March, we have our international food evening with Roy and Daisy. This is always great fun. We ask you all to bring a plate of food with you, preferably a traditional dish from your own country. Do try to come. That's Saturday, the 5th of March, here at 8 p.m. Now, on with the dancing.
Now you will hear what the organizer says again.
First of all, I'd like to say a big welcome to all our new members. We are delighted to see you here tonight at our international dance evening. Before we start the dancing, I'd like to give you details of our social program for the next few weeks. On Saturday the 5th, why not join Dave for lunch at 12:30 at Tatty's in Regent Street? Tatties do wonderful baked potato snacks, and it's a great place to meet for a chat. And here's something for musicians and music lovers. Wednesday the 9th is our music evening with Mike and his friends. Bring your own instrument, if you've got one, and join in, or just sit back and listen. That's at the club room here at 8 p.m. And for those of you who are thinking of visiting Scotland, a chance to see Pat's pictures of Scotland and hear something of the history of the country. This talk with slides will be on Friday the 18th at Pat's house, 19 King Street, at 7:30 p.m. And for those who are feeling energetic on Saturday the 26th, John is leading a walk around the very pretty town of Saffron Walden. If you'd like to join him, meet at the bus station at 11 a.m. Remember to wear suitable footwear and bring a coat or umbrella in case it rains. On the following Saturday, that's Saturday the 5th of March, we have our international food evening with Roy and Daisy. This is always great fun. We ask you all to bring a plate of food with you, preferably a traditional dish from your own country. Do try to come. That's Saturday, the 5th of March, here at 8 p.m. Now, on with the dancing.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two. Exercise 2, questions 8 to 12. Nazneen has been invited back to her old school to talk to the senior students about a working holiday scheme called Jobs Abroad. Listen to the interview and complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
I'd like you to welcome Nazneen, who's come back here for the day, to tell us about working holidays abroad. Some of you will remember Nazneen from last year. Nazneen, you've become a student rep for Jobs Abroad, haven't you?
That's right. I'm doing a management course at college. And in my spare time, I'm a volunteer for Jobs Abroad, running an information service for students wanting vacation work abroad.
How did you get involved?
When I went for my course interview, I saw a poster in the college advertising the Jobs Abroad scheme. I'd have done anything. Cleaning, clerical work, childminding. I desperately needed a break between finishing school exams and starting college. I contacted them found I fitted their requirements. Oh, you must be single. 17 to 24, and available for a minimum of 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are loads of different jobs. You've got to keep an open mind about what you could do. In the end, I was offered work as a waitress in a beach resort in America.
What do you normally expect to pay for if you're thinking of working abroad?
There's the airfare and insurance, the visa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jobs Abroad offers a discount and helps students get the cheapest flights and so on.
Yeah.
Well, in my case, I worked all summer, earned enough to live on, and had enough saved up before I came home to travel for 2 weeks through some of the most exciting places in America.
You're just 19 years old,
uh-huh.
And you went on your own to a country you'd never been to before. How did you feel?
Oh, very nervous. And even a little scared.
Mm.
I landed in New York, knowing that I was going to be away from home for 3 months.
Uh-huh.
The scheme fixes up the job and the accommodation for you, but you often arrive a day or two before and need to arrange your own accommodation for that time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I stayed in a youth hostel the first night in quite a run-down part of town.
Mm.
It was quite an experience.
Apart from a wage, what do you think students can expect to get out of working abroad?
You'll be really surprised how much you learn about yourself. You'll get yourself out there. You'll organise yourself. Get along with complete strangers. Make some really good friends, too.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get much more self-confidence, and that'll help when you start at university or work. I took an internal flight, hired a car with a group of friends, saw the Grand Canyon, explored Boston, went swimming in San Francisco, listened to jazz in New Orleans. I wouldn't call it mere survival. I thoroughly enjoyed it as well.
Mm-hmm. I imagine parents might be concerned about...
Mine certainly raised objections at first. But you need to be prepared to work on them a bit. Remember, the scheme has been running for 18 years. It's widely recognised and properly developed.
Good.
It's there to support you. They have a welfare person if you have problems. They organise social evenings to help you meet people. And, there is a special fund to cope with emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
I said to my family, what are the alternatives? If I stay at home, I'll need a job anyway. But that doesn't mean I'm going to find one.
Mm.
And I'll want to go away for a week or two's holiday before college starts. On my own or with friends. What's so different about doing this?
So, your advice to school leavers here is...
Go for it. But think it through first.
Mm.
Especially if you want to go to a non-English-speaking place.
Yes.
I mean, how are you going to cope with the language, the culture? What are you going to do if you get ill? Do you have enough money to see you through in any emergency? But, believe me, it's really a very worthwhile experience.
Good.
Well, if anyone is interested in knowing more about the scheme, you can talk to me now or give me a ring on 761-8799-4532.
Now you will hear the interview again.
I'd like you to welcome Nazneen, who's come back here for the day, to tell us about working holidays abroad. Some of you will remember Nazneen from last year. Nazneen, you've become a student rep for Jobs Abroad, haven't you?
That's right. I'm doing a management course at college, and in my spare time, I'm a volunteer for Jobs Abroad, running an information service for students wanting vacation work abroad.
How did you get involved?
Well, when I went for my course interview, I saw a poster in the college advertising the Jobs Abroad scheme. I'd have done anything.
Mm-hmm.
Of cleaning, clerical work, childminding. I desperately needed a break between finishing school exams and starting college.
Uh-huh.
I contacted them, found I fitted their requirements. Oh, you must be single. 17 to 24, and available for a minimum of 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are loads of different jobs. You've got to keep an open mind about what you could do. In the end, I was offered work as a waitress in a beach resort in America.
What do you normally expect to pay for if you're thinking of working abroad?
Ah, there's the airfare and insurance, the visa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jobs Abroad offers a discount and helps students get the cheapest flights and so on.
Yeah.
Well, in my case, I worked all summer, earned enough to live on, and had enough saved up before I came home to travel for 2 weeks through some of the most exciting places in America.
Ah, you're just 19 years old.
Uh-huh.
And you went on your own to a country you'd never been to before. How did you feel?
Oh, very nervous. And even a little scared.
Mm.
I landed in New York, knowing that I was going to be away from home for 3 months.
Uh-huh.
The scheme fixes up the job and the accommodation for you, but you often arrive a day or two before and need to arrange your own accommodation for that time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I stayed in a youth hostel the first night, in quite a run-down part of town.
Mm.
It was quite an experience.
Apart from a wage, what do you think students can expect to get out of working abroad?
Oh, you'll be really surprised how much you learn about yourself. You'll get yourself out there. You'll organise yourself. Get along with complete strangers. Make some really good friends, too.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get much more self-confidence, and that'll help when you start at university or work. I took an internal flight, hired a car with a group of friends, saw the Grand Canyon, explored Boston, went swimming in San Francisco, listened to jazz in New Orleans. I wouldn't call it mere survival. I thoroughly enjoyed it as well.
Mm. I imagine parents might be concerned about...
Well, mine certainly raised objections at first. But you need to be prepared to work on them a bit. Remember, the scheme has been running for 18 years. It's widely recognised and properly developed.
Good.
It's there to support you. They have a welfare person if you have problems. They organise social evenings to help you meet people. And there is a special fund to cope with emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
I said to my family, what are the alternatives? If I stay at home, I'll need a job anyway. But that doesn't mean I'm going to find one.
Mm.
And I'll want to go away for a week or two's holiday before college starts. On my own or with friends. What's so different about doing this?
So, your advice to school leavers here is...
Go for it. But think it through first.
Mm.
Especially if you want to go to a non-English-speaking place.
Yeah.
Mm, I mean, how are you going to cope with the language, the culture? What are you going to do if you get ill? Do you have enough money to see you through in any emergency? But, believe me, it's really a very worthwhile experience.
Good.
Well, if anyone is interested in knowing more about the scheme, you can talk to me now or give me a ring on 761-8799-4532.
That is the end of part two. There will be a short break before you hear part three. Part three, exercise one. Questions 13 to 16. Now you will hear a conversation between Jane and Darren about collecting old guitars. Darren has two old guitars, a Stratocaster and a Les Paul. Listen to the conversation and answer the questions in the spaces provided. You will hear the conversation twice. Darren, somebody told me you'd got a couple of old guitars. Is that right?
Yes. I'll get them out and show you.
Oh.
Hey, are they valuable?
Yes, they certainly are. This one's a 1960 Stratocaster. It's worth about £6,000 now. Oof. And this one, a 1955 Les Paul, is worth about £2,000.
Wow! That must be more than new ones would cost.
Well, yes, quite a bit more than new ones would be, in fact.
Look, I don't understand why an old guitar should be worth more than a new one. I mean, with the greatest respect, they do look a bit sort of, well-worn and battered.
Well, basically, I suppose they're worth that much because that's what people are willing to pay for them.
But why are they? It doesn't seem to make much sense to me. I mean, a new one would look and sound a lot nicer, wouldn't it? And it would be easier to play, wouldn't it?
Well, they might be easier to play, but in my opinion, they wouldn't look any nicer.
What's the point of having old ones, then? Do they go up in value?
Yes, they do. But that's not the main reason why I've got my guitars.
Oh.
You see, the old ones are much better made. Made from better quality materials. And made by real craftsmen instead of being mass-produced out of rubbish.
Aren't you exaggerating a bit?
I don't think so. Just look at the quality of the workmanship.
I'll have to take your word for it. To me, it just looks like a scruffy old instrument with half of its paint missing. I just don't understand why a thing like that can be worth that sort of money.
I've got a certificate with this one, which guarantees that it was owned and played by the late, great Buddy Holly.
Oh.
That's why it's worth so much.
Wait a minute. That can't be right.
Hmm?
I thought you said it was a 1960 model.
So?
Well, wasn't Buddy Holly killed in 1959?
Couldn't have been. I've got the certificate to prove he owned it.
Oh, well, let's change the subject, shall we? How long have you had your guitars, then?
I've had the Stratocaster for 6 years and the Les Paul for 10.
Just like collecting antique furniture, isn't it?
Well, it is in a way, I suppose. I got them for fun, not because I wanted to make money out of them.
No.
But they certainly have proved to be a good investment. The trouble is, I'm scared to play them these days in case I damage them. It's taken a bit of the pleasure out of it, I'm afraid.
I suppose you have to insure them. How much does that cost you?
I can't remember exactly what it is. It's certainly a lot, though.
Mm.
Still, imagine what would happen if they got stolen, or if I dropped them and they weren't adequately insured.
No.
Now you'll hear the conversation again.
Darren, somebody told me you'd got a couple of old guitars. Is that right?
Yes. I'll get them out and show you.
Oh. Hey, are they valuable?
Yes, they certainly are. This one's a 1960 Stratocaster. It's worth about £6,000 now.
Oof.
And this one, a 1955 Les Paul, is worth about £2,000.
Wow! That must be more than new ones would cost.
Well, yes, quite a bit more than new ones would be, in fact.
Look, I don't understand why an old guitar should be worth more than a new one. I mean, with the greatest respect, they do look a bit sort of, well-worn and battered.
Well, basically, I suppose they're worth that much because that's what people are willing to pay for them.
But why are they? It doesn't seem to make much sense to me. I mean, a new one would look and sound a lot nicer, wouldn't it? And it would be easier to play, wouldn't it?
Well, they might be easier to play, but in my opinion, they wouldn't look any nicer.
What's the point of having old ones, then? Do they go up in value?
Yes, they do. But that's not the main reason why I've got my guitars.
Oh.
You see, the old ones are much better made. Made from better quality materials. And made by real craftsmen instead of being mass-produced out of rubbish.
Oh, aren't you exaggerating a bit?
I don't think so. Just look at the quality of the workmanship.
I'll have to take your word for it. To me, it just looks like a scruffy old instrument with half of its paint missing. I just don't understand why a thing like that can be worth that sort of money.
I've got a certificate with this one, which guarantees that it was owned and played by the late, great Buddy Holly.
Oh.
That's why it's worth so much.
Wait a minute. That can't be right.
Hmm?
I thought you said it was a 1960 model.
So?
Well, wasn't Buddy Holly killed in 1959?
Couldn't have been. I've got the certificate to prove he owned it.
Oh, well, let's change the subject, shall we? How long have you had your guitars, then?
I've had the Stratocaster for 6 years and the Les Paul for 10.
Just like collecting antique furniture, isn't it?
Well, it is in a way, I suppose. I got them for fun, not because I wanted to make money out of them.
No.
But they certainly have proved to be a good investment. The trouble is, I'm scared to play them these days in case I damage them. It's taken a bit of the pleasure out of it, I'm afraid.
I suppose you have to insure them. How much does that cost you?
I can't remember exactly what it is. It's certainly a lot, though. Mm. Still, imagine what would happen if they got stolen, or if I dropped them and they weren't adequately insured.
No.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two. Exercise 2. Questions 17 to 21. Now listen to the following extract from a radio program about Michael Faraday, the famous 19th century scientist, and answer the questions in the spaces provided. You will hear the extract twice.
Irina McCabe, you're the librarian and archivist here at the Royal Institution. What sort of a man was Michael Faraday?
It's a very difficult question to answer, but by all accounts, he was an extremely enthusiastic man as far as science was concerned. Throughout his life, he was very concerned about the communication of science to the public, and he was very curious about the way nature worked.
How did he first come to the Royal Institution?
Well, he was a bookbinder's apprentice at the time, and one of his clients was a member of the Royal Institution, and gave him tickets to attend the last course of lectures given here by Humphrey Davy, since he was aware of Michael Faraday's enthusiasm for science.
How old would he have been at the time?
He was about 20.
Okay. So he came here to listen to Davy's lectures, but how did he come to work here?
Well, he took detailed notes of Humphrey Davy's lectures and bound them. He sent them to Davy with his compliments and asked Davy to remember him should he ever need an assistant. Several months after that event, Davy's assistant was dismissed because he was involved in a fight with an instrument maker. And Faraday was appointed as Davy's bottle washer.
Really?
Yes.
But when did he become a serious scientific investigator in his own right, moving in the direction that he wanted?
This didn't happen until the early 1920s.
It can't have been the 1920s.
Sorry?
It must have been the 1820s.
1820s, yes.
Sorry.
It just feels very much as if he's still with us. It's quite an extraordinary feeling.
I see. Now, his portrait is on the £20 note that's currently in circulation, and it's rumoured that Mrs. Thatcher saw him as the ideal scientist, somebody who would create wealth for the nation. Do you think that was what motivated Faraday?
Well, Faraday was above all motivated by curiosity.